Pamela Pottage. This is my podcast, In the Oast House. Hello, I'm Alan Partridge. I'm about to go for a run. Why? Because I care. I care about my health, and I care about looking good in front of women. I'm single. Married men, of course, have no such concerns. They can let themselves go, as they've got a woman and they have ready access to sex. They're further disincentivised by the fact that most women, once married, aren't bothered if their husbands are physically unappealing. They think it makes them less desirable to a female competitor and believe other things, such as companionship, are more important. And that's a legitimate point of view. Single women, however, through no fault of their own, are drawn to well-honed men. While dating profiles are peppered with references to things like wit and kindness, the fact is these attributes fall away when set against physical charms such as rippling legs or a beefy arm. The fact is we humans are little more than hapless vessels for our randy genes. We're reproductive ferrymen, a genetic bus drivers delivering our DNA down the generations. All we can do is help our chances by toning up. And I do. Not many men my age can get away with a tight polo neck tucked inside a belted trouser. I can, and there's only a handful of us are able to say that. Andrew Marr, Jeremy Vine, Hugh Edwards says he can, but he can't. The reason I can is because of what I do 3 mornings a week. Come rain or shine, I run like a bastard. And on today's podcast, you're going to run with me. Me, the kangaroo, you, my Joey, and my hoodie does have a front pouch on the midriff. I normally exercise in the Norfolk countryside every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I'll tug on my hoodie, climb into my shorts, and I'll be off like a hare. I have to take the same route every week. Part of it, of course, crosses private property. But when the farmer threatened to prosecute me, I threatened to tell DEFRA that he used his EEC grant to buy himself a Jag. Checkmate, he soon piped down, and I continued to run across his potatoes. But it feels good when you're an experienced runner. There's a sort of fluidity to running. You can't see me, of course, but former track champion Sally Gunnell once agreed when I said there's poetry to my running action, a sort of smooth locomotion, making it look as though I'm going much faster than I am. But of course, it's also good for the old noggin. I don't know if you know that book called What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. Terrible title. And indeed, a book I've not read. But according to an Amazon reviewer, the book touches on how runners achieve an almost spiritual state as they run. And that's how I feel now. There's a kind of serenity. I mean, I'm unaware of any shortness of breath, whatever I sound like. Or a pounding head, or screaming muscles. I mean, whatever I sound like, I actually feel like I'm floating. And the rain doesn't bother me. I'm just enjoying my run a lot. I'm gonna jump over this wall. Yeah, so I thought it'd be like to join me on the podcast and see how I'm able to run and talk at the same time. Yeah. It's starting to rain now, and although I feel capable of running at least another 6 miles or so, I'm going to go inside. Not because I couldn't run at least 4 times the distance I've run. I'm going to go back home because it decides to thunder. I can hear thunder, and I will act as a light. If I'm in an open field, I'm the tallest thing. I'll act as a lightning rod, I don't mean a lightning rod for ideas. I mean lightning rod, literally a lightning rod. And the only way to avoid that is by lying down in the field. And I just bought this A6 hoodie top. So all in all, because of the weather, I'm going to go home. But that was There you go. That's it. That's me running. Well, now I'm making my way home, having had to abort the run due to the treacherous weather conditions. The mother of all storms broke as I was 3K in, and I had to abandon the other 12 I would have done as a result. So, unfortunately, the rain was hammering the microphone, but making podcasting all but impossible. It's a shame. I felt good, but, you know, the rain was deafening. We might think of the countryside as peaceful, but there are sound issues, be it birdsong, tractor chug, or the deafening moo of a passing cow that can plague broadcasting. Even experienced Countryfile presenters have admitted to me privately that they still can't work out when a cow is going to moo. Hence why I'm in the back of an Uber right now, FYI. Funnily enough, I once wrote a short story about the racket you can hear in the country for the parish newsletter, a piece I called Cacophony. And they liked it so much, they asked me to write a follow-up, which I called Pandemonium. And almost everyone who read them said they were both as good as each other.
In 100 yards?
Yes, yeah, just down here. And then you take... Well, just ignore the sat-nav, just take the right. Yeah, ignore the sat-nav, take the right. Anyway, having called time on the run, I'm now shuffling back to the host house, courtesy of the Uber driven by... Sorry, what's your name?
Martin.
You picked me up before. Did you give me a score on the app? What did you give me?
What did you give me?
You say first. Oh, we'll both say on the count of three. 1, 2, 3, 4.
5.
Just so you know, I never give anyone 5. I only really go up to 4. Unless they've given quite exceptional service. 4 is a pleasant car, capable driver, friendly banter. That's absolutely you. 5 is... open my door for me, take my bags, and silence. And also to have no problem finding Radio 4. I mark you down because when I asked you to put on Radio 4, you looked at me as if I'd asked you to solve Fermat's Last Theorem or the Da Vinci Code. Yeah, it's just here on the right. Yeah, so you take... It's right here, right here. Right here! Yeah, what the sat nav says. It's not your dad.
My dad's dead.
All right, sorry to hear of your loss. Just here on the right, thanks. I should jump out and punch the code in. Actually, I'll walk up the drive. You don't need to drive up the drive. But if you leave, I'll punch the code in once you've left.
You don't want to see the code?
No! Bye!
Alan Partridge from the host house, from the host house, with Alan Partridge.
Listen. Listen a while. Listen a while more. That's, and let's dispense with the meteorological jargon, it's just a dirty great storm. And while the weather forecasters don't think it's as big as the storm of 87, I do. My dog seldom is cowering under a nest of tables, and that dog ain't no pussy and don't not scare for not nobody. He doesn't scare easily. Listen a while longer again. Listen a bit more. And yes, there will be those who don't believe this podcast has a clear purpose now that the run's been aborted, and who accuse me of wanting to bulk it out with long pauses as a substitute for the actual content. But they... are utterly wrong. If I use a pause, then I do so. For dramatic effect. If I was using a pause to waste your time, it would be... like that one. Or even that one. When I pause, I'm not ripping you off. I'm adding a layer of something. The absence of sound is a sound in and of itself. If you go to a classical music concert and there's a pause in the recital, the reason the conductor has a face like a kicked-in fridge door is because the applause has ruined the silence, and therefore the piece. When Simon and Garfunkel sang about the sound of silence, people laughed their heads off. They thought they'd made a mistake. 40 years later, the penny dropped. People realised that these Jewish pop singers were onto something. A storm is not an unpleasant sound. This actually would have been good for a tape I once made of white noise. You look at most white noise apps, it's all babbling brooks and crashing waves. Mine were a little bit more inventive and included the whirr of a food processor, the burble of a Victorian toilet system slowly refilling, the whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop of a helicopter, in this case that of Noel Edmonds, recorded, I'm delighted to say, without his permission. The sound of hundreds of YKK zips, all being deployed at the same time. A floor being swept by a quiet cleaner. The hubbub of a cafe packed with young mums. Not sure that one's relaxing, but it certainly helps empty the mind of anything troubling or vexing. Seriously, listen to that storm. I'm looking at it, but it's getting worse. The rain's given way to hail the size of cricket balls. They're not cricket balls, they're bloody large. They're big. They're like bigger than fat peas. And they're like white meatballs. Okay, I've got to put the car in the garage. Well, oh my God, I've just been out in it. My God, it was awful. I noticed the car was getting a drubbing and I thought, I don't feel comfortable with this. I am not comfortable with this at all. I'm going to have to put it in the garage. But once it was in, then I realised... I realised I've got to get back to the house. I don't have the protection of the car. What do? I had to improvise. I found a green laundry basket, which I put on my back like a sort of grotesque human turtle hybrid, and started to crouch walk from the garage while the hailstones battered against my shell. Plus, I poked my head out of the side wearing a bike helmet and had a cagoule which trailed behind the shell so it looked like a tail, making me look even more like a turtle. At one point, I slipped and my shell fell off, and it was like being pelted with conkers by God. Anyway, far from being an episode lacking in purpose, just because I was unable to complete my run, it is one with its purpose renewed, because on Twitter, I've been asking people to tell me tales of keep fit from days gone by. All we seem to hear about these days are high-tech, newfangled ways to stay in shape, hot yoga, Zumba, hot Zumba. But in the days before gyms, what did you or people do to keep fit? Leonard in Wandsworth Prison says, when I was young, there were no opportunities to exercise or join sports clubs. With nothing to distract me, I fell into crime. I served time for some minor misdemeanors in my 20s. While inside, I took an open university course. Oh, and my life began to change. Unfortunately, once released, I returned to crime and soon afterwards was sentenced to life in prison for a gang-related murder. But I used this as an opportunity to regroup and focus. I got in shape, and now, after 3 years, I am as fit and strong as I have ever been. And I am now the daddy, and no one fucks with me. Well, good. Seem to have been through some trying times, but it's glad to hear that, you know, that things have turned out well for you. So, yeah, good luck with your new position. I'm sure he'll thrive. He goes on to say, P.S. was delighted the BBC invited you back into the fold last year. You are a reassuring, steady hand in an otherwise volatile world. He's an odd fish, this one. I can't get a handle on him. Christy writes on Twitter saying, you never see James Bond go to the toilet. Not exactly on topic, Chris, but you do have a point. I guess it's possible that Q might have invented some sort of slim catheter concealed in the lining of his tuxedo. Then again, if that was the case, he would struggle to run with it once it filled up. He'd have to wear quite baggy tuxedo trousers. And of course, you can't fight with a big bag of piss tied around your waist. Another one here from... What's that? It's like the sound of a siren calling me to my death. Although this one's a touch flat, a bit pitchy. Hang on. Oh, it's Rosa. Of course she thinks I'm out running. She said, I'm always out on Wednesdays and the car's not in the drive. Right. I should let her know I'm here. She's obviously expressing herself in a way she wouldn't if she knew anyone could hear. I'll just close the door, leave her to it. Yesterday, I once came home to find my assistant Lynn had let herself in and was rehearsing things she would say when she met the bishop. It was all, you know, good idea, Your Grace, and flirty giggles. I opened the door loudly to let her know I was there, and I came in to find her wiping off lipstick with some kitchen towel. It was pretty unseemly. Never heard Rosa sing. I'm not familiar with Filipino music. I just make out... Gukum, gukum, gukumpa, 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 gukumpa. I wonder what she's singing about. I'm ashamed to say, it makes me realise I know almost nothing about her. By the way, in my last podcast, I mentioned that my housekeeper, Rosa, had an apron bearing the words cook, 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 cookability. That's the beauty of... And then the final word had become illegible. I wonder what it was, and many of you have kindly tweeted in to tell me what you think it is. Paul in Derby says, hi, Alan, it's gas. Ah, so it would cook, cookability. That's the beauty of gas. Yes, I see. Yes, I remember now. Fran in Roehampton says gas. Johnny Be Good says gas. Bobby 9000 says answer is gas. Fiona in Birmingham says gas. Psycho Killer says gas. Adrian says think it's gas. Derek Beavers and Andy Mac and Jenny all say gas. Clarence in Chester says gas. Then you've got Philip in Devon, gas. Albert also in Devon, gas. Tiger Lily, gas. And William in Frosham says the answer is gas. And Hilary works part-time in an artisan cheese shop, says gas. She's still singing. Can you hear that? Can you hear that? It's a wonderful, haunting quality to it, like a lament for a lost love. You can almost imagine what she might be singing about. Probably something about a young woman... Not unlike Rosa, maybe. She fell head over heels with a local boy back in the Philippines. He a dashing young sailor, she a headstrong young seamstress. Do they call them seamstresses when they're sewing footballs in a sweatshop? You can see it, though, can't you? You can just see it, though, can't you? Her parents wouldn't have approved. Her father would have taken him to one side and on pain of death forbade her from seeing him. Love saying forbade. People say, that's not a word. And I say, yes, it is, actually, because it is, actually. But their love was true, and he would not forsake her. He knew if he forsook her, also a real word, she'd be heartbroken. Alas, one night, and this may just have popped into my head because there's a storm outside, a great storm came, treacherous seas, the shipping forecast, ominous. Southerly severe gale, force 9 continuing, moderate or poor, becoming good for a time, but he refused to stay on the shore. How could he when he pledged he'd provide for her? He'd have kissed her, told her to keep the fire lit, but that night, under a crashing wave, his boat would have snapped like a matchstick before being consumed by the swirling waters. And perhaps now, gone, consumed by the waves, he only returns in her dreams to declare his love. In Filipino, gukumpa. Gukumpa. Poor woman's been through the mangle of life, the emotion... squeezed out of her and dripping onto the floor before she came to rest on the radiator that is Norfolk, to dry off, ready to be worn again. You know what? Her song, Rosa's song, I shall call it, it's made me realise something. Cleaners are people. Because we don't really think that, do we? We never dream of asking our cleaner how she is or how her family is or how her health is or did she have a pleasant weekend. No. When she says, hello, Mr. Allen, Happy New Year, you just say something like, the downstairs toilet needs some attention. When you see a postman, you just see a postman. Or woman, actually. You don't see a human being with a name, a family. You don't see a person. The same with a cleaner. Same with any menial worker, a cabbie, a barista, a nurse. Think about it. Would any of us dream of stopping and engaging our cleaner in conversation? How are you? Where are you from? Do you have any family? Of course not. Yet they are flesh and blood, just as we are. They laugh, they cry, and yes, of course, It's important they do these things in their own time, but like it or not, these people are more than just a difficult-to-spell name on a zero-hours contract. Thinking about it, I actually heard Rosa laugh last week, somewhere between a high-pitched cackle and a turkey being throttled. Her laugh reverberated around the Oast House, and you know what? I'm glad. Because whatever the reason for her laughter, a filthy Filipino joke retold silently in her head, a funny message received on text, although she shouldn't really be. Whatever, I'm pleased for her. I don't think I'm going to run today. I think I should use the time I would have spent running talking. Talking to a lady I've begun to know. A lady called Rosa. Gukumpa. Guk. Right, I just realised the song she's singing is the music from the Go Compare advert. Gukumpa. Yeah, it's Go Compare. Yeah. But I still think she was probably dumped by a trawlerman. Horrible people. Smell of fish. Rosa, I'm here upstairs. Keep it down, love.
Alan Partridge from the Oast House. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. From the Oast House. With Alan Partridge from the Oast House. With Alan Partridge. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. Alan Partridge from the Oast House. From the Oast House. With Alan Partridge from the Oast House. With Alan Partridge.